KALW.
It's a very hard job, but it's also very rewarding.
How does a lawyer provide equal representation for all?
I'm an immigrant myself. Personally, I understand, but I'm dealing with a system that doesn't have a lot of compassion sometimes.
Practicing cultural competence in a legal system that often lacks it. Then we join a Sunday ritual focused on clean streets and good beats.
I'm wearing a bedazzled construction orange neon vest and bunny ears. And that's just a really fun way to make it a little more zesty.
And we meet the newest KALW beat reporters.
We're just talking on the way over here about how great it would be to co-produce a few stories, really bringing each of our individuals' point of view, worldview, experiences.
We meet KALW's new beat reporters. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Today, we're going to introduce you to our new beat reporting fellows for 2024, Wendy Reyes and Mary Catherine O'Connor. You'll be hearing directly from them about the work they want to do later in the show, but you've already heard their work on our airwaves. In fact, both of them came from our Audio Academy cohort of 2023. So before we hear the work they're planning to do, here's a quick sample of the stories they reported last year. Up first, Wendy introduces us to an attorney committed to bringing cultural competency to her clients.
When I was in college, my family asked that I meet with an immigration lawyer. They needed legal counsel and thought I'd be the perfect mediator because I speak English and they don't. The lawyer spoke some Spanish, but challenges went beyond language barriers. I began to witness nuances and semantics lost in translation. The lawyer asked me to step in, but I barely understood the legal jargon. I felt the frustration of everyone in the room. In the end, I left a couple hundred dollars short and without a case. That's why I'm seeking out Natalia Vieira Santana, an immigration lawyer in Oakland's Fruitvale neighborhood.
Oh, nice to meet you. Thank you for waiting. I was finishing up a consultation.
Natalia's law practice grew out of a compassion for people and her own experience.
I hope I can have staff that reflects the clients that are, choosing to come to my office. And so they can feel very comfortable, so they don't have to worry about getting an interpreter. So we can make sure that communication is, the best that we can do.
Escritório da doutora Natalia Santana. Como eu posso te ajudar?
Hello, you've reached Santana Law Offices. How may I help
Oficina
you today?
Oficina da abogada Natalia Santana, que le puedo ayudar?
Hi, doutor Oficina, sou abogada Natalia Santana. Tem rádio on high?
The firm is made up of staff who speak Spanish, Portuguese, English, and Mam, a Mayan language. I think about how things might have gone differently for my family if their lawyer had been a fluent Spanish speaker. Speaking the same language as your client is an example of cultural competency. But it goes beyond that. Cultural competence means checking your own biases and assumptions, understanding the cultural backdrop, beliefs, behaviors, and needs of a client. A miscommunicated detail or a lack of trust can influence a client to withhold information and derail a whole case. Cultural competence in jobs like law and medicine can be the difference between winning or losing a case, healing or hurting a person. That's why she wants her law office to be different.
But it's important to try to hold that with compassion, and it's important. I think it's the basis of having a human relationship, yeah. Because you're talking to people, you're talking about their families, you're talking about their stories, about why they left their countries. So there's this very human aspect that sometimes I feel everybody maybe who wants to work with, every lawyer maybe who wants to work with people maybe should get some therapy training in law school, because there's I think that's a big aspect of it too.
It's not therapy training, but law schools are adding some requirements. In 2022, the American Bar Association adopted a requirement that all law students in the country take anti-racism and cross-cultural training before graduating.
there was just a huge upswell in interest among the students to be better contextualizing the work that we do, particularly around race and racism, but also all other kinds of inequities that the law tends to exacerbate or create or ignore.
The point is to break away from traditional power dynamics.
An old-fashioned notion of lawyering is, I'm the boss who understands how the law works. You just tell me what you want fixed and then now stay out of my way, right?
Instead, she hopes these new courses help law students be more human-centered.
Part of what a lawyer has to do in honoring that partnership is a humility around, like, I don't always know best, right? And part of what the client knows best is the way this problem that they want solved fits into who they are in a cultural context. And a lawyer just has to have humility around that, even if they can't know how the ins and outs of every single solitary culture.
They also need to keep in mind, race plays a role in many aspects of the law.
I think that we tend to think about obvious racism in a few big areas of law, right?
Voting rights, criminal law, anti-discrimination law, but what about something like intellectual property?
It is important to understand all of the ways in which some people have been denied access to their intellectual property around race because of racism.
She hopes course requirements like the ones at Berkeley will help students consider these contexts. Kristen adds that a major step towards ensuring culturally competent lawyers is having a diverse profession.
The more the profession looks like America, the more likely a lawyer is. Any given person is likely to be able to understand, find a lawyer who is not only culturally competent, but fluent in their culture.
But the profession does not look like America. According to data collected by the American Bar Association, Black attorneys made up roughly 5% of U.S. lawyers in 2021. Latinx counsel made up 6%, and Asian lawyers, 5%. Only 38% of attorneys in the U.S. are women. So yeah, the likelihood of working with a client who shares a different cultural background is extremely high. That's why Natalia Santana is proud of her Fruitvale-based office, her staff, and the work they do for immigrants.
Escritório da doutora Natália Santana. Como eu posso te ajudar?
It is a very hard job, but it's also very rewarding because when you win a case and you like see that like a family is going to be able to stay together, somebody or like this person is not going to have to go back to their country where they were persecuted, it's just like feels so, it's really hard to beat that feeling. It's a very good feeling.
It's one of her favorite things about being a lawyer, knowing she can provide the representation immigrants deserve. In Oakland, I'm Wendy Reyes for Cross Currents.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. Up next, we're getting down and a little dirty with Mary Catherine O'Connor's story about a group of volunteers who meet up every Sunday morning at Manny's, a cafe and event space in San Francisco's Mission District. They're devoted to cleaning up the neighborhood's notoriously litter-clogged streets. And to prepare, they wear rubber gloves, bedazzled orange safety vests, and they turn up the dance tunes. Once the trash bags are full, volunteers are gifted with freebies to local eateries and other merchants. Reporter Mary Catherine O'Connor welcomes us to Manny's Disco Trash Cleanup.
Okay, pick up people! Happy Sunday! Woo! Thank you all so much for being here. My name is Eric. I'm a volunteer helping organize these trash pickups through Manny's. We're going to go through a couple of rules of the road and then send you out on routes around the neighborhood to clean up trash. Don't worry too much about the streets because the street sweepers will come and grab that. We need to focus on keeping the sidewalks clean and safe for everybody and their dog. As a big thank you for being involved, we have a bunch of great goodies. So we have gift certificates to a variety of local merchants, and then we have a leaderboard where you can earn epic prizes to thank you for your community service. So for 10 trash pickups, you get your very own disco scrunchie to keep and hold forever and always. For 25 pickups, you have a disco ball. And then for 50 pickups, a whole year of cleaning up the city, you get your very own disco vest, SF's hottest, newest fashion statement.
Everything at Manny's has to be disco themed. It's like, it's an unknown requirement. We love disco music, so why not a disco trash cleanup? My name's Angelina Postelli. I'm the director of operations, and it used to be only once a month. And then right when I started, Manny decided to do it once a week, because if you're trying to actually make an impact, once a month cleaning up trash isn't that noticeable, but once a week is.
A vest, a pair of gloves, one or two trash bags, and then a grabber.
My name is Kat Nguyen. I live in the Mission, and I think this is my 15th time.
I'm Brooklyn Montgomery. I live in the Mission, and I've done it, I think, 11? Yeah, this is my 11th time.
My name is Natalie Amadeo. I live in the Mission, and I think I'm on my 9th or 10th time doing this.
I'm Jen Bryce. I live in the Mission as well. I've done this probably 15 times too.
I feel like we joke a lot that it's like a video game. You just like, it's like a simulation. You're just picking stuff up, and I think that's fun. I really like Manny's.
It's like everyone kind of goes and gets a pupusa or empanadas after, and you meet other people in the neighborhood who also want to get together and clean it up, which is nice.
Let's see, we got a rubber glove. We got some cardboard boxes. I think there's some like toothpicks, matches, cigarette butts, that kind of thing.
Typical?
Pretty typical, yeah.
Michael Vossen. I live in Inner Richmond, right next to Golden Gate Park. I hope that just by us being out here, people are more aware of the trash and it's less of a... because it's one of those things that can become invisible. I think that people just stop noticing. I think that's the solution, us being out here. The solution is raising the awareness to get people to make some like significant structural changes of how we use plastics, of how we organize and dispose of trash, all those things.
My name is Casey. I live in, I think, in Grand Park neighborhood. I've been picking up mostly cardboard, but there's some like paper, and but those I think the most found thing that I've seen is cigar butts.
Like cigarette butts?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, those.
Yeah.
I don't like it at all. It's like, it pollutes the ecosystem, and it just looks bad too.
Hi, I'm Serena Romick. I live in Nopa, and this is my first time doing the trash pickup. We were just looking for a fun thing to do on our Sunday and decided that might as well combine some fun with a little bit of help for the city. I think as we're coming out of the pandemic and kind of growing and getting back to our day-to-day, I've seen a lot of improvements, but there's obviously, you know, ways to continue to better the area and the city in general.
My name is Jesse Zachman. I live in Cow Hollow in San Francisco, and this is actually my first time doing this. I love how this location at Manny's, they make it fun. Like, you can't see me, but I'm wearing a bedazzled construction orange neon vest and, like, bunny ears, and that's just a really fun way to make it a little more zesty, so I appreciate that extra effort from them.
We get a free yoga class at Love Story after this, and I love their yoga classes, so definitely very excited about that, and I think I saw some dollar margaritas on there, which I might have to check out, but maybe after yoga.
Gary Miller. I moved to San Francisco in 1979, so I saw it go through lots of evolution, and I've been looking to where I can put my time into helping the community since I love this place and I live off of 18th Street. We have to get involved, and it is up to us to do what we can, and the more we can do that, the more impact we'll make. And it's not about giving up, it's about picking up trash.
I got it.
Excellent.
Thank you all so much for coming out to help make the city a better place, to meet your neighbors, to make some new friends, and to get involved giving back to this wonderful place we call home.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Next, we're going to meet the journalists you heard from in today's show, Wendy Reyes and Mary Catherine O'Connor. They're both graduates of our Audio Academy, and now they're the newest beat reporters in our KALW newsroom. I sat down with them recently in our studios for a chat about their reporting. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba, and I'm here now with reporters Wendy Reyes and MC Mary Catherine O'Connor, whom we just heard from in today's show. They are our new beat reporters here on Cross Currents. Hey.
Hi there.
Hello.
Wendy, let's start with you. You are a Mexican-American multimedia artist. You came in to KALW with this passion to talk about immigration stories.
Yeah, I am going to be reporting on immigration here in the Bay Area. And one of the reasons I'm doing that is because my family is made up of immigrants. I have a close community of immigrant friends, families, and coworkers. So the topic overall touches home for me. And reporting with the immigrant communities in the Bay Area is very significant. I want to be able to tell stories to highlight not only the injustices that immigrant communities face here in the Bay Area, but also to talk about the victories and celebrate some of the collective power that we all share and that immigrant communities have.
Tell me a little bit about that story we just heard in terms of cultural competency and the legal field, right? It's been difficult for a lot of people coming to this country to access culturally competent legal services because, you know, sometimes we think about cultural competency as just language, but as you talked about in your story, it's not just language. So why did you want to delve into this issue in particular?
Yeah, again, it was an experience that hits close to home for me. I had the opportunity to talk with an immigration lawyer, and it wasn't a positive experience. And it was through that situation that I realized I wanted to tell a story about highlighting the need for cultural competency within immigration law. And I don't want other people to experience that. So it was really significant to talk about what are the ways that lawyers can show up for clients of multiple cultural backgrounds. And like you said, language is just one way that lawyers can be culturally competent for their clients, but also to dive into what are the solutions presented today, to talk about how in education, law students are being taught how to be culturally competent and how to meet their clients where they need to be met in order to provide successful representation.
Yeah, I'm always curious about this question. For me, I always feel like the best stories I do are the ones that touch me personally and my story and my family and where I'm from. I feel I share that with you as well. What will you bring in terms of you and your personal story with immigration?
One of the reasons why I wanted to take on immigration actually was to take it on as a learning experience for myself as well, and also exposure to multiple cultures outside of my own. Being Mexican American, I have an intimate closeness with Latinidades here in the US and with Latino communities, but also exposing myself to the myriad of immigrants across various cultures in the Bay Area.
To me, reporting about immigration and kind of stories about people that are not from this country, I don't want to only hear about the struggles, but also, like you said, the successes and the joy within the cultures as these cultures are celebrated and celebrate themselves here in the Bay Area.
Not only the stories of joy and celebration, but also what stories of joy and celebration do they want to share and what stories do they want to hear? I think it's really important to, when we're talking about immigrant communities and working alongside immigrant communities, to not only point out the struggles, which is significant, it's really important to always voice and highlight these issues, but to understand that immigrants are multifaceted and that they experience joys as much as they experience struggles, and to celebrate the collective power, like I was mentioning earlier, because it's so significant to know that you're never alone. And that's beautiful.
Mm. All right. So, Mary Catherine, you are going to be covering climate for us, but you've been doing that. And you've been doing a lot of stories on litter and cleaning up streets in San Francisco in particular. And the story that we just heard was about this really fun event, made to be fun event at Manny's. So tell me, what brought you to this idea?
Right. So I think about garbage a lot. I kind of call myself a garbage dork because I'm a little bit obsessed with materiality and the things in our lives and their upstream and downstream impacts. A lot of people don't necessarily equate that with climate change, but it really has everything to do with climate change, right? We have carbon emissions because we make a lot of things out of oil and gas, and because we power industry and do all kinds of other things with oil and gas. So the interest there for me is to think about the things that are around us in the Bay Area. Litter is really an acute problem in many parts of the city. There's a lot of illegal dumping also that happens. One of the things I think is interesting about the litter problem in San Francisco is that it really forces you to reckon with the things we consume and where they go afterwards. And so in that story, I found it was interesting that the participants felt satisfied and gratified with their weekly ritual of going out. And they have these like disco ball, like necklaces that they get if they come for a number of weeks in a row. And there's all these kind of rewards. And you also have the visceral reward of like having a garbage bag full of trash that you've picked up the street, and you know it's all piles up here, and then the city comes and takes it away. To me, it's actually demoralizing because you come back next week and mm-hmm. it's still there, and it's like a faucet that is running. So I don't know. It's just, to me, that's a really interesting topic. My questions to the folks that I spoke to were kind of getting at that, kind of like, is this a Band-Aid or a solution?
Right.
And I don't know. Some people didn't really want to inquire too much. They were doing it because it felt like good to them. It made them feel like they were doing something.
Right. Right. Like in the moment, something mm-hmm. that they can control. Mm-hmm. And you talk about the link between waste and climate change. And that is something you talk about a lot. Will that be present in your future reporting on KALW?
Absolutely. Yeah, I really think that climate change is really the most extreme version of waste mismanagement in society. And it happens, I think, because private companies have one mandate, which is to increase shareholder value. And what happens on the road to that value is of less importance, and it's not valued, that doesn't give the company's shareholders any more benefit, right? Mm-hmm. Some of these wastes are visible and some are not, and many of them are not. And that's, you know, I think the one way people get into that and understand it is through their vehicles, because we see a tailpipe and we know what's coming out of it. But our buildings are a bigger source. Like in my life, my home is a much bigger contributor to climate change because I have a gas furnace and a gas hot water heater. my first story that I'm doing coming soon is about how do we change the way our buildings are powered, and what does that mean in the big picture? If we were all to do it, it's really going to make a material impact in climate change.
So that was a sneak peek into your next story. So Wendy, what about you? What can we expect from you? What are you looking into?
Currently, I'm working on multiple stories, but coming up, I've got a story about the history of Chinese immigrants in San Francisco creating their own medical systems and institutions. I've got another story about language accessibility to arts in the Bay Area, so plays that are only made in Spanish for monolingual speaking immigrants and communities in the Bay Area. I've got stories about domestic workers, which are made up of women of color, many of whom are immigrants. So those are some of the things that you can expect coming up.
Wonderful. Before we say goodbye, I feel like there are a lot of crossover between both of your beats. You know, climate stories from pockets of immigrant communities.
Yeah. I mean, Wendy and I were just talking on the way over here today about how great it would be to co-produce a few stories, really bringing our each of our individuals' point of view, worldview, experiences to a story about environmental justice, perhaps migration. Climate change is driving migration. And I think it's a really important topic and one that doesn't get covered enough. And I would love to have Wendy on my side and helping to tell that story. It would be really amazing.
This is very exciting. I definitely want to do this. Thank you, Hannah.
Wonderful. Well, thank you both, Mary Catherine and Wendy.
Thank you.
Thank you, Hannah.
That's Wendy Reyes, KLW's immigration reporter, and Mary Catherine O'Connor, KLW's climate reporter. You can expect to hear stories from them, and they'd love to get story ideas from you. What would you like to hear them cover? Send us an email with your ideas at feedback@klw.org. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.